Now, if you want to be one of those healthier people, you've likely heeded advice to limit fat in your diet, especially from food like meat, eggs, and cheese. We've heard that advice for decades, but the evidence suggests fat is not quite the villain we've been told. NPR's Allison Aubrey has the first of two stories.
If you want to trace our fear of fat, Washington, D.C. is a good place to start, right at the U.S. Capitol.
So over here is a statue of George Shoup, who was a senator from Idaho.
That's Senate historian Don Ritchie, and he says Shoup was a beefy guy.
Yes, he protrudes. His belly sticks way out beyond his waistcoat.
And this was considered to be...
This was the epitome of success in the late 19th century. A large man was somebody who had accomplished something.
And corpulence was still a sign of power in the 1950s. As we stroll past a Senate dining room, Ritchie shows me a menu printed in May 1954.
We have, for instance, deep-fried southern chicken, you know, lots of mashed potatoes with gravy.
There were sweetbreads, Salisbury steak, buttered succotash, and pineapple cheesecake.
Yes, a lot of hearty food. And this was midday.
The economy was booming, and many Americans were living high on the hog. But soon, that prosperity began to cast a dark shadow within the halls of Congress.
If you look at the statistics, members were dying at a rather large rate.
This was an era when it was not uncommon for American men to drop dead of heart attacks. In the 60s and 70s, 8 senators died in office of heart disease.
When you have colleagues who die prematurely, that's sort of a wake-up call.
The harms of smoking were already on the radar, but scientists were just beginning to make connections between diet and heart disease. Senator George McGovern of South Dakota decided the government should put the issue on the front burner. So he called a hearing and summoned the likes of Nathan Pritikin, a longevity guru who believed a diet could reverse disease, and a Harvard professor who pointed to preliminary evidence that eggs and meat raised cholesterol. The message that came out of this hearing was that America's problem was the overconsumption of fat.
The thinking of the day was that you wanted to reduce fat consumption.
Gary Taubes is a science writer who's written extensively on this topic. He says the hearing led to the first set of U.S. dietary guidelines. And Taubes says once fat was fingered as the villain, the thought was that any way you could get it out of the diet had to be a good thing.
And if we did it by merely replacing, you know, milk and cheese and fatty meat with carbohydrates, with pasta and potatoes and rice, this would make us live longer and it would make us thinner.
Now, to be fair, Taub says the kind of carbohydrates the guideline writers had in mind were whole grains, fruits, and vegetables. But this message was lost in translation. What Americans heard was fat is bad and carbs are good. And the food industry saw the low-fat, high-carb mantra as an opportunity to create a whole new range of products. Remember fat-free frozen yogurt? Or how about Snackwells?
Excuse me, do you make these delicious fat-free Snackwell double scoop cookies?
Why, yes, I do.
Want to tell us why we can't find them in the stores anymore?
Foods with little or no fat flew off the shelves. Pretzels were good. Nuts were bad. Baked potatoes were fine, but hold the sour cream.
By the early 1990s, the whole country had effectively gone on a low-fat diet.
But for many Americans, a low-fat diet meant more sugar, more refined grains, and more packaged foods. And what happened?
Right around this time is when America starts getting fatter and more diabetic.
And a number of experts say that in trying to address one problem, heart disease, by removing fat, the original dietary guidelines actually made things worse.
There are definitely unintended consequences of the original guidelines.
That's Mary Flynn, a professor of medicine at Brown University. And she says over the last 40 years, research has shown that the fat people have been trying so hard to avoid is not the enemy it was thought to be.
There's been a number of studies done, and there's been no benefit for low-fat diets to lead to better weight loss, and there's no benefit for low-fat diets to lead to less disease.
What's clear now, she says, is that avoiding fat is not the key to a healthy diet. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
Monday, Allison reports on why eating some fats can be good for you.
Today in Your Health, let's follow up on Friday's report on fat.
Researchers have found that advice to cut back on eggs and meat may not help your heart or your weight. A big reason is what Americans started to eat instead, NPR's Allison Aubrey explains.
If you remember the 1990s, you might recall the fat-free boom that swept the country. Elizabeth Stafford, who's an attorney in North Carolina, was in college back then.
Oh, yes. I ate fat-free cookies, fat-free pudding, or even cheese. Oh, a lot of fat-free cheese, which was awful.
The fat-free message was everywhere.
So you switched from whole milk to skim milk, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And if you hadn't made the switch, food marketers would remind you.
Do you know that granola bar is loaded with fat?
Stafford says back in those days, she avoided all kinds of fats, cheese, eggs, meat, even nuts and avocados.
No one cared about serving sizes or protein or anything like that, but it was always just making sure that it had zero fat.
Elizabeth was certainly not alone. A low-fat diet was what all the experts were recommending to prevent heart disease.
Fat was really the villain, and by default, that meant you had to load up on carbohydrates.
That's Walter Willett of the Harvard School of Public Health. But he says as early as the mid-1990s, there were signs that this advice might not lead to fewer heart attacks or strokes. He had a long-term study underway evaluating the effects of diet and lifestyle on disease.
In our studies, we were following 40,000 men.
So he was able to analyze what happened when people ate less fat and more carbs.
We were finding that if people appeared to replace saturated fat with carbohydrate, there was no reduction in heart disease.
Willett submitted his findings to a top medical journal, but he says they wouldn't publish them.
There was a lot of resistance to anything that would question the low-fat guidelines, especially the saturated fat guidelines.
They were supported by highly influential groups, such as the American Heart Association.
It was really conventional wisdom, almost to the point of religion, that saturated fats were the villain for heart disease.
Willett's paper was eventually published in 1996 in a British medical journal. Now, it wasn't just scientists beginning to raise questions. After 5 or 6 years of low-fat eating, Elizabeth Stafford decided it wasn't working for her. She was gaining weight. Those bagels and sugary yogurt she ate for breakfast left her hungry an hour later.
I've constantly felt starving, and I constantly felt like I couldn't eat enough to be satisfied.
Now, nearly 20 years later, a far more complicated picture has emerged of how fats and carbohydrates contribute to heart disease.
You know, we've learned that carbohydrates aren't neutral.
That's Dariush Muzaffarian of Harvard Medical School.
They used to be the base of the pyramid, eat all the carbohydrates you want. But carbohydrates worsen glucose and insulin. They have negative effects on blood cholesterol levels. And most of our carbohydrates are highly refined and processed. And so, you know, thinking that that's just been okay and in a replacement for saturated fat has actually not been useful advice.
And at the same time, Muzaffarian says, scientists have been learning more about fat.
Over the last decade, an enormous amount of scientific evidence has indicated that the relationship between dietary fat and heart disease is not as clear as we once thought.
He explains the case against saturated fat was made decades ago when studies showed that foods like meat, cheese, and eggs could raise one type of cholesterol. But there's been a lot more research since then.
If you look at the whole picture of how saturated fat influences blood cholesterol levels, including its effects on LDL cholesterol, HDL cholesterol, triglycerides, many other complex factors, one would actually come to the conclusion that it has a relatively neutral effect on heart disease risk compared to carbohydrate.
And research also shows that some fats, particularly plant-based fats, such as olive oil and nuts, seem to have a beneficial effect on heart health. What's more, scientists now know that many factors influence the risk of heart disease. It's not just cholesterol. Things like inflammation, blood pressure, glucose, and insulin levels all play a role. So where does this leave us? Well, many people are moving to a more moderate approach. Elizabeth Stafford is one of them. She now eats a bit more fat and far fewer carbs.
It took me a long time not to be scared of it, but I realized how much better things tasted and how much I'd missed making scrambled eggs with butter or eating a hamburger.
It's not every day, but she says the occasional burger no longer makes her feel guilty.
Here in Washington, D.C., it's been a little colder than usual.
Oh, my God. It's 21 degrees.
How are you? I'm David.
Hi, David.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So a few of us at Morning Edition decided to go cook up something warm with Carla Hall. Carla is one of the hosts of ABC's talk show, The Chew, and she was a finalist on the reality TV show Top Chef. We are over at her house to test out a recipe from her new cookbook.
Should we follow you to the kitchen?
The book is called Carla's Comfort Foods, and she put it together with cooking writer Genevieve Coe. Today, we are going to make spanakopita. It's Greek, but the book is full of dishes she loves from around the world. She says she follows threads of flavor through different cultures, because food is what connects us. Whether it be cooking techniques or flavors, cultures never feel too far apart.
Your nose doesn't have to look like mine. Your skin doesn't have to look like mine, but I can still celebrate you.
And you feel like the kitchen is a place where you see that we're all the same in many ways.
Yes.
For people who don't know, give me the nuts and bolts of spanakopita.
It has spinach and feta cheese, and it's in this little phyllo pocket.
It's flaky, and you can't stop yourself.
Exactly. You just keep eating them. Yes, and every time you say yes, I'll have that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was catering, I would make that dish, but I would have lemon because I love a good pucker, and I love lemon.
So, I love a good pucker.
I love anything like sour and tart, and you just can't get too tart for me.
Now, instead of making those little pocket hors d'oeuvres of spanakopita, we're going to make it the more traditional Greek way, as a big casserole.
I've thought about how much time it takes to make the recipes. I've thought about how many pots and pans you're going to use to make the dishes. I really wanted people to want to do it.
I want to do it.
Do you want to do it?
I want to do it.
Let's do it, David!
So we start the oven.
Let's do 345. Just press 3 and a 4.
Give me the basics. I like that. Okay.
And then start.
And line up our ingredients.
Scallions.
Check.
A shallot. Yes. Yeah, those are shallots.
I knew that. Done.
Garlic.
Got some garlic.
Perfect.
Check.
Also an egg, crumbled feta, ricotta cheese, nutmeg, spinach, parsley, and we've got a problem.
Phyllo sheets. Are we using phyllo or puff pastry?
Puff pastry?
Yeah, we brought puff pastry. Who knew that was different from phyllo dough?
This is what happens. No, you make it work.
Because this is puff pastry dough sheets, you're saying this is not what you would normally use.
No, but this is what we're going to do, because I'm all about the Gombe moment.
Uh-huh.
So what we're going to do is actually roll our puff pastry out, we will brush it with egg wash, and we will bake it.
With a new plan and confidence, we get going again.
How good are you with a knife?
Great.
Uh-oh.
Well, no, I'm not. But Carla is, so she chops up the scallions and the shallots and the garlic.
Let me get the pan on. And what we're going to do is sweat all of our onions and garlic and shallots down.
Okay, talk to me about sweating.
So all I'm saying is you just want them translucent. No color. Mm-hmm. They're just wilting down. I'm going to have you put some what I call compliments.
Compliments.
So you're going to do a nice pinch.
Okay.
And I call them compliments, which is salt, because if you don't use it, you ain't going to get no compliments.
I like that. You're pro-salt.
I'm pro-salt, but too many compliments is an insult.
Now, at this point, Carla adds 2 pounds of spinach to our salty, sweating mixture. I'm stirring it up as the leaves wilt down with some success.
Do you want tongs?
Oh, I was just thinking the tongs would be very helpful. Yeah, thank you. Let's see. I feel more in control now.
No, you're good.
Thank you.
Yeah. The tongs are one of my favorite tools in the kitchen because...
Why didn't we go to the tongs in the beginning?
Because you wouldn't appreciate the tongs as much as you do now if I'd
started
with the
tongs. All right, so we've got the spinach wilting on the stove. And over on the table, we're mixing up the feta and ricotta in a bowl.
Yes.
We're going to add our lemon zest to this ricotta and feta mixture. Lemon and spinach, they love each other. And another thing that loves any kind of milk or creamy goodness is nutmeg. So would you do the honors of doing the nutmeg?
Okay, I'm just going to... Run this across.
Yeah,
That smells good.
Doesn't that smell good?
Yeah.
Okay, mixture done, and Carla is rolling out the substitute dough, and it seems to be working despite our hiccup. Next, we pre-bake the dough a little. We stack it all together with the spinach mixture squeezed dry of water. We put it all together, and all goes in the oven. There's something about Carla Hall. You almost forget that she's a celebrity chef. Here we are in her home kitchen where she's been cooking for 16 years. Now, maybe your kitchen isn't perfectly stocked like the kitchens you see on television. And Carla Hall likes to set an example that you can cook her recipes right there. She says it's important for her to stay flexible and nimble while she's cooking. Even though she's part of the whole celebrity chef culture, she has some concerns about the message that's being sent to aspiring young chefs.
Kids are going to culinary school saying, what do you want to do? Oh, I want to be on television. And they don't realize all the work that a lot of those people were doing 15, 20 years in the business and working at their craft. Some of these kids want to make food that looks good and looks pretty. But at the end of the day, you have to eat it, and you're feeding people, and it's an honor to feed people. This is not a flash in the pan career. I'm not saying that's everybody, but that's a lot of people going to culinary school now.
And by this point, our spanakopita is almost ready to come out of the oven.
Okay, I'm going to have some.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh!
Is it okay?
No, that's me being happy.
I thought you burned yourself.
I love it. I wonder if it's too late to change the recipe in the book.
You like mixing it up this way?
I do. I like it. Doesn't it make you do a happy dance?
We were spending time with Chef Carla Hall. Her recipe for spanakopita is at our website, npr.org. Her latest cookbook is called Carla's Comfort Foods, Favorite Dishes from Around the World. Hope you're hungry. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm David Green.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. The Arizona Diamondbacks played their first home exhibition game of the year in Phoenix last night. Final score, Chicago Cubs 3, Arizona 1. But some of the best action occurred inside the team's kitchen, where they prepared a giant corn dog. This requires some serious eating. Peter O'Dowd reports from member station KJZZ.
Chef Michael Snoke has created a monster.
This thing looks like a bat.
18 inches of meat, skewered, wrapped in cornbread, stuffed with bacon, infused with cheddar cheese and jalapenos. All that resting on a bed of fries.
I have created the D-Bat.
Yes, the D-Bat. $25 and it's all yours. Snoke's had an eye on the culinary competition around Major League Baseball. Last season, the Texas Rangers introduced the Boomstick Dog. 2 feet, $26. Snoke says his masterpiece is superior for this very simple reason.
Well, it's a corn dog, man. Everybody loves a corn dog.
It's gone. It's in my belly.
Meet the first man alive who's tasted the D-Bat outside of the team's inner circle. Arizona Republic sports writer Bob McMenamin got a sneak peek at Chase Field.
It's going down pretty good. Yeah, so far, no burps. And I feel honored.
I'll be honest, I did feel left out. The dog's inventor says it's supposed to be shared, but there's something unsettling about asking another journalist for a bite of his corn dog. Anyway, McMenamin's having eater's remorse.
I'm not going to touch the fries because there's no way there. I'm going to get those down.
You worried about your heart at all?
Yeah, big time worried. I'll probably have to see a doctor tomorrow.
Chef Snoke didn't bother checking the nutritional value of his corn dog. If you've got to ask, he says, you probably shouldn't eat it. But come on. You're dying to know.
All right, so let's tally this up.
Nutritionist Simine Levinson's got this mean little tool on her computer. Type in a food and out comes all its dirty little secrets.
Perhaps not surprising, there is not an 18-inch corn dog currently in existence.
But the traditional 6-inch corn dog does exist in the database. Type it in, multiply by 3, and you get
832 calories.
Add a few slices of bacon, yum. 3 ounces of cheddar cheese, all right, triple yum. 3 servings of French fries, and voila. 3,000 calories and about 2 days worth of sodium in one package. Regardless, Levinson says fans will eat it up.
Hopefully they have a pocket full of statins and a defibrillator nearby so that in case they do go into a cardiac arrest, help will be an arm's length away.
For his part, the creator of the D-Bat says it's supposed to be fun. And he says if you want healthy, order a salad. For NPR News, I'm Peter O'Dowd in Phoenix.